Ready to talk some Duck sports, and even though it's the Hoop pregame, can't ignore football on this day. The website that bleeds green and yellow, Oregon.247sports.com. Follow him on Twitter. Use the handle at Premer247. Matt Preem, how you doing?
Good, Steve. I'm fired up for this basketball game. No other news going on.
Yeah, really. We were trying to think of something to talk with you about, but I'll tell you what, when it comes to the firing of Mark Helfrich, I'm asking everybody to forget analysis. Is it the right move, the wrong move? You follow this program really closely. When it became official and the Ducks fired their head football coach, what was your personal level of surprise, if any?
Pretty high, because I had been hearing for a while that the Utah win had really won over a lot of people's concerns. It showed a lot of progress. The guys had played hard. For the first time, it was a complete game. And you look at the fact of how many young guys were on this football team, and how the potential of this team for next season of quickly bouncing back, and the fact that, like you said, they haven't fired a coach since 77, and I was born in 86. And I mean, it has been that long, and I didn't think they had it in them, and I didn't think everyone talks about Oregon being the SEC West, and I just didn't think we were at that level where after one bad season, you tear everything down and you don't show any kind of loyalty for the guys that have been there for so long. And maybe Rob Mullins, felt like last year was a sign, and maybe that he felt like, there was some concerns, and that last year, while they finished 9-4, Vernon Adams and Matt Hagerty, the center, covered up a lot of deficiencies offensively and defensively, and that, it was needed for a change. 538 came out with that story today about how this was one of the fastest free falls from being elite to just a bad team and college football history. There's only three teams that are worse, and SMU was number one, and they got the death penalty, and that's why they're number one. And that tells you a lot right there as well. But I was shocked. I didn't think it would come to this. And here we are. It's the new age for everybody in this athletic department and everyone that covers this team and everyone that's a fan of this program.
You talked about some of those young players. A couple of them made themselves available to the media today. Troy Dye, Brady Breeze, along with Doug Brenner, who's a junior, obviously. What kind of things did they say to you guys? Do you expect this move to cause this already kind of thin team to have players transfer out? And, obviously you being in the job that you're in covering Oregon recruiting as well, what is this going to do to the current class that they have?
Well, your first question, Doug Brenner said that's a natural assumption. Guys are naturally going to consider their options. And he said that it's important that guys stay calm and don't make, emotional decisions. Kind of like what Rob Mullins cited for his reasoning of leaving town after Saturday's Civil War and not having that meeting with Helfrich on Sunday morning or Saturday night. He wanted to remove himself from the emotions of the loss. And I think a lot of these guys are, they're probably heated. I think there's a lot of them that are going to consider leaving. There's going to be some that are going to consider going pro when they probably have no business going pro. And it Brenner stressed that, guys are going to have to just push through that and let the sting and the hurt wear off a little bit before you make a rash decision that you might regret down the road. I don't know if there's going to be any transfers. Quite frankly, I don't think there's anyone really on this team that it makes a lot of sense to do that, unless you're talking about a Troy Dye or you're talking about maybe a Brendan Schooler or maybe Jaylen Brown. Guys that don't have redshirt, and guys that still can redshirt as they sit out a year. I don't know. I don't anticipate anyone really transferring out of the program. As for recruiting, this has been botched the entire way, because I don't believe that Mullins could have had they should have known one way or the other what they were doing after the Civil War outcome. That game shouldn't have been the final nail in the coffin. That they should have known going in what they were going to do, and not giving Markel Fritch any kind of a heads up. That press conference happens every year. That Sunday press conference happens every week. That's something that, is a regular occurrence. And I don't think Mullins never should he didn't even have to make a decision Sunday. He could have just come out with a blanket statement Saturday night, Sunday morning before that press conference and says, I have to be in Dallas. I want to talk to Markel Fritch, but I literally cannot do it. I'm evaluating the program as we speak. I will do so after I speak with Markel Fritch later this week when I get back to town. That's the only comment I'm going to make. Had he done that, I think all this flack wouldn't have happened, because now Helfrich is out there, and no pun intended, he's a lame duck coach trying to recruit guys, and his staff are lame duck coaches out there trying to, you know, they're going to be asked, are you going to be here? And they can't answer that question. That and other programs are going to feast off of that. And we've already seen two guys decommit, their top recruit, which was a surprise. Another one was a four-star defensive lineman, which that one wasn't that big of an issue or surprise, I should say, because there's been talks for over a year now that he was probably going to flip to hometown BYU. But you've got a tight end that's being courted by Florida State. You've got a couple other guys, a four-star corner that's being courted by USC. You've got a linebacker that's being recruited by UCLA. This class is hanging by a thread right now, and it's important that A, they figure out who this coach is going to be by end of this weekend, so that next weekend Oregon can send out their new staff to go and recruit, go meet all the recruits, go talk to their top targets. Because after next weekend, you've got a dead period for five weeks, and coaches can't go and see players. And so if you don't get things done in the next week, you've got 7 weeks of uncertainty with your commits, uncertainty with your targets, and uncertainty with this program, no matter what, if you've hired a coach, because they can't go out and talk to the guys.
You know, I'm curious, as we kind of shift back to basketball, as we all know, one of the big criticisms of Helfrich and Oregon football over the last couple of years is how, at least there was a perception of this, that their recruiting had taken a big dip. Meanwhile, on the court, Dana Altman has had no trouble consistently bringing in 4- and 5-star classes, pretty much across the board, no one below a 4-star for this program. All things are basically equal there, facilities, community being recruited to. Why do you think there's sort of a disconnect between football and basketball in terms of the caliber of kids that can be brought in?
I think Oregon's coaching staff for football, they are stand-up guys first and foremost. They represent the university extremely well. They have a long-standing history with this program. You know, Oregon constantly totes out the longest tenured coaching staff in college football history, you know, in the country. And that is great. That is a huge tip of feather in their hat. But at some point, you cross the line of that being a positive to that being a negative. I don't think this staff has enough guys that are younger, that can relate to the pro, that can relate to today's recruits, that can go out and say, you know what, I'm during the month of December and the month of January and the week of February, I am going to be gone for 6 weeks recruiting. I am not going to complain one bit. I love this stuff. I'm going to go to every single school I can possibly go to. I'm going to see 300 kids in 40 days, and I'm going to eat that up. I don't think this staff has enough of those types of recruiters on staff. They've got great coaches, no doubt, and I don't think the staff has enough connection to today's recruits. And for basketball, they've got some younger guys. Stubblefield is an assistant coach. Mike Menega is an assistant coach. Are two younger assistants who really relate well to recruits. And at the same time, they have that drive of, I want to be out on the road and I want to recruit for 30 days. I'd love to be at home, you know, seeing my family, but this is my job and I eat it up just as much. They've got that drive. I don't know if Oregon staff has. It's a weird dynamic because they've been there for so long. They've proven that they can recruit. They've proven that they can, you know, develop talent. But at the same time, there's a point where you start losing connect naturally. I mean, it happens everywhere where the older generations talk about the younger generation's music or they don't understand their fashion or what have you. That happens in every person, and I think Oregon football has reached that point.
Hey, Matt, I want to get to some specifics of this team. We've seen the true freshman, but the highly touted JUCO guy, Cavell Bigby Williams, some early games, he seemed to be rebounding well, but then he played 2 minutes against UConn, seven against Boise State. What are you seeing or the coaches saying about, you know, obviously he's struggling?
Yeah, I think this is the highs and the lows of junior college basketball, and that sometimes you get a guy who's played against some great competition, and another time you see a guy that, yeah, he's just physically taller, more athletic, and just in a position where he can dominate, not because of skill, but because of God-given attributes to his athleticism. And I think, you know, the strange thing is that Bigby Williams and Chris Boucher came from, I think, the same junior college league. So they're playing through, you know, the same team, per se. I'm curious if we were to go back and see what the quality of those teams were like from Boucher's sophomore season to Cavell Bigby Williams' sophomore season, because he's clearly – he put up just as good as numbers as Boucher did, but he's clearly behind where Boucher was at coming into this program last year. I think he's really raw. I don't think that was anticipated. I think he's certainly got the mold to be a talented player. He's long. He can move. He can jump. He's shown to be a decent rebounder. He's blocked a couple shots, but his offensive game, I think that's the biggest issue for him, is he's not as clean of a scorer as I anticipated, and I think that's kind of preventing him from being on the floor because he's not a jump shooter. And if you've got Casey Benson and if you've got Dylan Ennis on the floor as well, and Jordan Bell, who's going to shoot the basketball? You need spacing, and he doesn't provide that. So it's Oregon trying to figure out a way to get him on the floor, get him touches, get him looks at the rim, yet at the same time keep that spacing, because that's this team's biggest issue, is they don't have enough shooters on the floor that can consistently knock down shots to spread out the defense, open up the driving lanes for other guys to do work.
Talking to the Matt Prehm of Duck Territory, you know, I know this is a pretty confident bunch, but they frankly haven't looked good most of this season. Obviously, Baylor's turning out to be a very good team, but the Georgetown loss wasn't good, struggling against Tennessee and Boise State. We know Dana Altman won't say anything positive until they beat someone like Kentucky in the national title game, but you interact with the players. Have you noticed any shakiness in their confidence because of the struggle so far?
I don't think it's confidence. I think it's too much confidence, to be honest with you. This team, Dana said it on Monday night that they're trying stuff, but they have no business to try. And I think that's just the fact of this is a team and this is a program where we've never seen it reach this height preseason-wise. They've certainly been a top 10 team. They've certainly been one on the cusp of being a top 5 team at the end of the season or playing like that. But they've never gone into a season where they're picked to win the national championship. They're picked to have a preseason All-American on their team. They're picked to have multiple NBA draft picks on this team. They've never reached this point before. And trust me, there's a different level of being good and then being elite. And the attention that comes with that, the scrutiny that comes with that. And I think this team got too caught up trying to be that team everyone wanted them to be and not who they really are. This is a team that's still built around team ball. You know, they don't have that guy. Even Brooks, I don't think, is that true, you know, Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball guy at Washington or UCLA, where, you know what, every night he is guaranteed to be the best player on the court, and it's not even close. I don't think Oregon's got that. They were good last year because they had that team chemistry, and they had five really good college basketball players that played as one unit. And right now they're not doing that. To me, it's almost like they've got five commanders and not enough soldiers, you know, trying to follow. I said that on Twitter during the game. They've got too many guys trying to be leaders and not followers on this team.
So much good information there, Matt. We appreciate your time. We know you're on the move with everything that's going on. Check them out, oregon.247sports.com. The handle on Twitter, at Premer247. Matt, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Matt.
Hey, thanks, guys. No problem.